Thanks to Gary Franchi for interviewing me on his WHDT World News. I thought you might like to hear our talk.
So we're standing in the wake of the Manning verdict. NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden has gained asylum from our former Cold War adversary in Russia. War hawks are banging the drums to invade another sovereign nation. We're also at the five-year anniversary of the nation's worst financial crisis in decades. Larry Summers has told Obama no to being the next Fed chief. In your opinion, what is the state of the union?
Well, of course, you know my position. I'm a secessionist. I'd like to break up the union. There's no, you can't have a free country that's got 300 and whatever million people in this, the size of this country. It's too big. I must say I'm not a fan of the union. I don't think the union is a good thing. But as to the economy of the union, of course, they're messing everything up in really historic fashion. It's been happening for a very long time. We can really look back to the establishment of the Federal Reserve 100 years ago as being just the beginning of the end for the American economy and certainly for the average American's standard of living, which has been, it was just a study just out of that the average family's income is much lower than today than it was in 1989. And I think we all feel that. I mean, the oligarchs, the 1%, they're doing even better. 25 years ago, the 1% controlled about 5% of the wealth within the American boundaries. Today, it's 25%, and they keep getting more and more. It's because of the government. The government operates for them, and the Federal Reserve continues to inflate in a way that really is unheard of in the history of the human race. There never has been a situation like the current one where the U.S. central bank in cahoots with all its subordinate central banks in Europe and Japan and elsewhere is printing money at an extraordinary rate. So how this all ends, I'm afraid I know. I'm afraid it's not going to end well. What happens sort of in the meantime, how long it takes, you know, that's much more difficult to say. Just today, we had the Fed announce that they're not going to taper, which I think was always a ridiculous notion, their quantitative easing, because if they stop the quantitative easing, if they stop the money, this vast money printing that's going on, there's going to be a crash in the stock market. And since they seem to be doing everything for the people involved in the stock market and the Wall Street and the big banks and so forth, they can't, quote unquote, taper. And we're going to see terrible stagflation. Maybe we're going to see much more serious inflation. I don't know when these things are going to happen because this is all uncharted territory.
Let me just jump in because Larry Summers declined the nomination from President Obama. Do you believe that's because he doesn't want this massive collapse that you have just predicted to be on his watch?
I actually think that Larry Summers was told so long by the White House. I don't think he voluntarily. This guy is extremely arrogant and very, very sure of himself. The fact that, for example, when he was president of Harvard, that he virtually destroyed their massive endowment because of the investments he made, crazy, crazy investments that he was warned against. Nothing fazes this guy. So I think that the fact that the Democratic left opposed him, the feminists wanted to oppose him, and Elizabeth Warren and other important Democratic leftists were against him, and of course all the Republicans against him. So it was I think Obama was asked him to go back to Harvard.
Now let's shift gears, talk about Syria. The Assad regime has provided evidence for their claim that the Syrian rebels were the ones responsible for the Damascus chemical attack on August 21st. What would be the significance of this if the Syrian government did not use chemical weapons on their own people, but in fact, the U.S.-backed rebels did?
Well, I think it seems to me that any government is capable of any crime. So did the Assad regime, as the American regime claims, use this on its quote, you know, its own people? By the way, why is that worse than doing it on another country? They always, you know, also, by the way, the Geneva Convention that says it's a war crime to use gases of this sort that were originated in World War I are only having to do with war, I mean, with attacking another country. As horrible as it is to do it to people in your own country, it's not actually against international law. So what Obama's claiming there, that he can force this, that he's the guy who's going to take care of everything, because of the Geneva Convention, he's actually not speaking the truth. I know that will shock you. My guess is certainly everything seems to indicate that the so-called rebels, the American-backed rebels, the rebels who were trained by America and the American regime at its Air Force bases in Turkey inserted in there to overthrow this last secular regime that wasn't bowing down and kowtowing to the U.S. and Israel. They wanted, you know, the fact that I think is no question the rebels used this. Did government troops also use them? I don't know. And I also, by the way, why is it okay to shell with heavy artillery a civilian village and kill everybody in it? Why is that okay? And using poison gas, the end of the world. I don't understand the distinction. Poison gas is a horrible thing. So are bullets. So are so is white phosphorus and depleted uranium that the U.S. uses against international law in its wars. So is Agent Orange. I mean, all the chemical weapons the U.S. has made use of, they're all horrible. A bullet in your skull is horrible. So I think that the fact that they tried to, there's a reason, this is all a trick to try to single this particular weapon out in order to justify a U.S. regime change, vast bombing. And of course, they're going to kill tremendous numbers of civilians, but they don't care. They're just, you know, collateral damage. Oh, the heck with them.
Let me ask you about John McCain and John Kerry, both sides, different sides of the aisle, yet coming together and calling for action in Syria. What does that mean when both sides of the aisle, Republican, Democrat, come together on such an issue?
Well, you know, I'd like to see them both dropped over Syria myself. I mean, I'd give them a gun and a parachute and send them in if they're anxious to go to war. Well, of course, McCain, a war criminal, a guy who bombed civilians in North Vietnam. Kerry, a war criminal who was responsible for taking the Phoenix program CIA assassins by boat up and down the various rivers to assassinate people, civilians, of course, that the U.S. wanted assassinated. So both of these guys are war criminals. So now they're instructing us on morality. I don't think it means anything that they're together. Both parties are identical on all the important issues. The Republicans and the Democrats are exactly the same, whether it's Syria, whether it's quantitative easing, whether it's many, many other kinds of programs. The Republicans have their own kind of fascist medicine. They don't want Obama's fascist medicine, but they don't actually want a free market. So I think it's not at all surprising that these two birds are together. They're birds of a feather. And it's a good rule. Anything that Kerry or McCain ever says, believe and do the opposite.
Let's talk about Barack Obama and his reassurance that this week he said his number one priority is still rebuilding the nation's economy. But on the Syria front, the administration is still supplying rebels in Syria with weapons. And it's been announced that over 20,000 U.S. and NATO forces will continue to remain in Afghanistan. How are Obama's actions conducive to strengthening America's economy?
Well, obviously, they're not. He dissolved the government if he were concerned about strengthening the economy. He wouldn't keep doing all the stuff he's doing. You know, his medical program, just like Bush's medical program, is horrendously damaging to what's left of the free market in this country. He keeps stepping up regulations, tightening them around the necks of especially small business people, because he's in cahoots with big business. We only have to remember that Obamacare was written by the big drug companies and by the big insurance companies. It wasn't written by communists. It's a fascist program of big government and big business together against the rest of us. He's destroying the economy. We're all getting poorer. Everything he's doing, and I must say, again, he's not alone. This was Bush, the Bush regime, and previous Clinton and all the rest of them. They all do tremendous damage. They're all about the transfer of wealth. They want to redistribute wealth. They want to take money from the taxpayers and give it to the tax eaters. I mean, that's what Mises and John C. Calhoun and Rothbard and so many others have pointed out. That's the nature of government. There are two classes. Government divides society into two classes, the people who get the taxes and the people who pay the taxes. And needless to say, the people who get the taxes want to turn the screws on the regular people who are the working people. The average government employee, federal, state, or local, makes double what the average taxpayer makes. And yet we're constantly being told about, oh, the poor teachers, they're not paid enough, or the firemen, they're not paid enough, the police, they're paid plenty, they're paid too much, obviously far too many of them. I'd like to see them all go to work at McDonald's myself and actually do something productive for society.
Lou, Let's talk about the reawakening in Americans and the desire for peace. Has Syria and the calls to attack Iran even, have they inspired a new peace movement in America?
Well, I think I don't know about so much about a peace movement, although I certainly hope that will be coming. But I think that the average American taxpayer is sick of war, not as sick of war as they ought to be, but they're making progress. And it's quite a wonderful thing to see. Murray Rothbard always used to talk about how it was, no matter how discouraged we might be, no matter how bleak things might look to us, to keep reading, keep writing, keep speaking, keep telling the truth about liberty and about the state, because the climate of opinion, which runs everything, can change and change radically, and it can change very quickly. So I would say, especially because of the work that Ron Paul has done in his two presidential campaigns, and there was a Pew Foundation polls of young Americans in 2007 that showed that the thing they loved most about Ron Paul, college kids and other young Americans, was his stance for peace. At that time, it was being said, oh, kids just like Ron Paul because they want legalized pot. Well, I must say, I'm glad there should be legalized pot, and there's nothing wrong with that as a reason. But without a draft, the fact that in my day, the peace movement was motivated pretty much by the fact that we could all be drafted. And again, nothing wrong with that, because the draft is slavery and it's horrendous. And of course, we were right to oppose it, and we should oppose it now. But that these kids who are not facing a draft, but simply out of their moral vision, understand what's wrong with war, why it's, you know, murdering people. It's mass murder by the government. And it's, of course, has horrendous economic effects, horrendous political effects, grows the government and grows tyranny like nothing, leaves, you know, mountains of corpses. The average person gets, you know, obviously gets nothing out of it. On the other hand, the bankers, the military-industrial complex, all these people, they make a zillion dollars out of war. They're very happy with war.
What do you think that the president's action with Syria will have as far as impacting the upcoming elections?
Well, you mean the next presidential election?
Well, the congressional and presidential.
Yeah, I don't know, and I must say I pretty much don't care. I mean, I don't think that's where the action is. I don't think that's where reform will come. Reform will come from the people, and when the people demand it, then the politicians, who are all a bunch of, you know, crooks and criminals and clowns, will go along. So I think the fact that there is this tremendous surge of interest in peace, and I think also a lot of feelings against the government. I think people are sick and tired of having the government have a noose around their neck and keep tightening it. That's where the progress is coming from. More and more people are understanding about economics. They're starting to understand our own history as versus the lying version that's taught in the public schools. This is the reason to be so enthusiastic, so optimistic about the future, because America's young people are not believing the lies anymore. They're not accepting the lies.
I want to talk about the future. You mentioned Ron Paul. You were his chief of staff. And Ron Paul always referred to, during his campaigns, he referred to the Liberty Movement. He referred to the Liberty Message. Can you define those terms for our viewers?
Well, you know, I think it's obviously a broad, encompasses a whole lot of ideas in the free market, laissez-faire in economics, in foreign policy, and in fact, in everything. Ron Paul's a believer in the golden rule, that we should do unto others the way we would like to be treated. That's how we should treat others. So that's his rule in foreign policy and in terms of the government and everything. So the government, also sound money, no Federal Reserve. And an infinitesimal, by today's standards, constitutional government for Ron Paul. That's what that would mean. Something akin to, you know, what we had in the days of the founding fathers. Not bigger than that. So that's, you know, those are the liberty ideas. And anybody who's interested in these kinds of ideas, they comprise the liberty movement.
Well, let me ask you the last question. How do you feel, now that we've defined the term liberty message, how do you feel that the liberty message has permeated America since Ron Paul's last campaign, and how do you see the same message transpiring through Rand Paul's 2016 presidential run? It's obvious we know he's going to run.
Well, you know, I'm most impressed by just how Ron's message has not only permeated America, but the world. I mean, young people, you know, whenever one goes to a foreign country, it's quite amazing to find out how many young people are Ron Paulians. I mean, he's had such a huge effect in Latin America, in Europe, in Asia. I mean, the whole world is turning Ron Paulian. So I think that is the really encouraging thing, and just one of the many reasons I'm so optimistic about the future.
Thanks, Lou.
Okay, thank you very
much.
Great
interview. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Well, thanks so much for listening to the Lou Rockwell Show today. Take a look at all the podcasts. There have been hundreds of them. There's a link on the LRC front page. Thank you.